Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, November 19, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me. And since we last talked super late on Tuesday night, it's continued to be a rough go for the Big Ten. You might remember, on Monday night, number 10 Illinois lost at unranked Marquette. Then on Tuesday night, number 4 Michigan lost at home to unranked Seton Hall. We talked about both of those games on the previous podcast. And then on Wednesday night, number 20 Maryland lost at home to unranked George Mason. And then on Thursday night, number 19 Ohio State lost at unranked Xavier. Plus, Rutgers lost at DePaul, which should never happen. That seems like punishment for renaming the rack after a sub shop. According to Jared Burson of ESPN Stats and Info, buddy Jeff Borzello tweeted this Thursday night, it's the first time in Big Ten history and only the second time in Division I history that a conference has had a ranked team lose to an unranked slash non-conference opponent on 4 consecutive days. Deadleg, the Big Ten is supposed to be the best conference in the country, and it might be, but it sure is losing a lot so far this season. These dudes can't get out of the Gavitt games fast enough. Question for you, is it time to relegate everybody in the Big Ten except Purdue, to the Big South, Big West, or Big Sky? We can assign them however we see fit.
What's the best Big Sky fit for the Big Ten? I guess Nebraska.
It's definitely Nebraska.
Okay.
I'd feel sick for those Big Sky opponents having to go to Pinnacle Bank, though. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, we can't be doing that. I tell you what. So because of the way the preseason KenPom projections work, and there's a ton of preseason bias still built in, the Big Ten is still rated as the best league in America as we speak this morning. The Big 12 is a close number 2. In reality, the Big 12 is the best league right now and could well be the best league again. You are right. They couldn't get out of it. They could not get out of those Gavitt games fast enough.
They ain't never been. This is going to be like when Kentucky lost at Indiana. John Calipari was like, all right, we're not doing that anymore. Like Christian Wofford shot. And John was like, all right, we're done with that. The Big Ten is going to be done with the Gavitt games, but they're going to have to find something else to play in. The Big Ten Big Sky Challenge is now going to take up the second week of the season. The Gavitt games are done.
Hashtag Big Ten Big Sky Challenge. Now that you mention it, like, I'm wondering in the past decade, how many times a Big Ten team has even scheduled a Big Sky team? Doesn't feel like I'm getting a lot of Montana State playing Wisconsin. Doesn't feel like that's a common bond there, but we sure could use it. That's a hell of a stat that you brought up that Borzello tweeted. I also heard it on SVP shows late on Saturday night. By the way, that noise you heard is disappearing forever. That is a noise I cannot stop on this computer. I will soon be using this computer, but I don't have the dongle. Don't even get me started on this. So we had a couple of complaints about, what's that noise? Why don't you guys turn off your alerts? I can't turn off that alert. I have tried. I don't know what to do. So that's disappearing.
I thought I was supposed to be the technology challenge.
Oh, my God.
I turn off all my alerts. You'll never hear an alert from me.
We almost never heard from you.
That's
20 minutes
go.
To get going on this bad boy.
Because I had a bad wire.
Bad. It was bad. We almost had to go bootleg audio there, but we are good to go. This should be the last podcast you ever hear that stupid noise on my computer. It's so perfect, by the way, and I'll get to the Big Ten in a second. Like, they make these new MacBook Pros, and these are now all of the inputs. They don't have USB, so I got to go buy an adapter to get this hooked up so I have my mic working.
I have every adapter you could possibly imagine. I have so many adapters. I travel with... We should show my suitcase on the podcast.
Like a Grateful Dead roadie. Yeah.
It really is. Like, it looks like I'm in a band, except I'm not. I'm just the Jim Nance of college basketball podcasting. But I have like a little case, and it's got every adapter, every IFB, every portable mic. I got portable lights now. I'm set up. Anytime you need to talk to me, I'm going to sound great and be well lit, except for the like 20 minutes ago. That was exactly a problem. But going forward, I'm in a good place.
Not a nose. Okay, so the Big Ten is not doing so well. But how about this? It's not just the Big Ten, although it is in trouble. In that four straight days, ranked teams losing to unranked opponents, only the second time ever that it happened, is wild. First time in Big Ten history. Here's what we have for records across the country right now from conferences. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see them scrolling across the bottom of your screen. So the best record by far, you got the Big 12 at 29-2. The Big East is 31-4. Great start to the Big East. SEC 37-6. Fourth best record. You know what it is?
Big Sky.
Oh, I don't have Big Sky on. So I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty positive it's not the Big Sky. The WCC is 30-7. Gonzaga, BYU, San Fran, Santa Clara, St. Mary's, a combined 18-0, all undefeated. Hashtag forbid WCC. San Francisco got a come-from-behind win against Nevada on Thursday night. Big time. Seriously, WCC. We'll save it for maybe another pod, but they're looking pretty nice so far. Then the Americans, 28-8. And then ACC and Big Ten, both with 10 losses apiece. The ACC is 38-10. The Big Ten is 37-10. The Pac-12. Oh, boy. Doesn't even deserve to play the Big Sky. 32-11, and the Mountain West hasn't played nearly as many games. Mountain West is 23-11. So those are your overall records. We're 9 days into the season right now. Big Ten's having its issues, but it's not the only big league. That's why I brought that up, GP. ACC already in double-digit losses. Pac-12 already in double-digit losses as well. The Big Ten gets the most attention because it had the most high-profile teams heading into the season, and you've seen some unexpected losses happen at the top of the standings.
Obviously, of the past two nights, I think the most interesting and, you know, relative to the point spread, most surprising result was George Mason going and winning at Maryland. George Mason had never beaten Maryland in the history of the world, and they go and do it on Wednesday night, and they go and do it with first-year 33-year-old head coach Kim English. Which is just a great story. You know, I have to update the top 25-1 every single morning. Do you know that? Woo!
Yes, and we all know that. Yes.
And I typically write about a team that is in the top 25-1. And yet for Thursday morning's top 25-1, I, you know, you could tie it to Maryland because they were in there. Not anymore. But I mostly wrote about, you know, George Mason and Kim because it's such a neat deal. You know, they, I don't think I've been to the NCAA tournament since 2011. Never finished better than fifth in the Atlantic 10 with Dave Paulson. So last March, they fired Dave and they hire Kim, who was an assistant at Tennessee. Before that, an assistant at Colorado. Played collegiately at Missouri and subsequently played in the NBA and sort of a rising star in the coaching profession. At a very young age, again, 33, he gets a job at George Mason, which he's from Baltimore. So he grew up 60 miles from George Mason's campus, 40 miles from Maryland's campus. He's a Maryland native. And in his fourth game as a Division I head coach, he goes and beats Maryland at Maryland. Like, I feel sick for Maryland fans because I know they didn't want that to happen. But if you can separate yourself from that just a bit, it's a really neat story.
It's a very good story. Yes. First of all, I think I've seen about 20 media members refer to Kim English's age when they've brought up the fact that George Mason's 4-0 now. I think this might be mandatory. 33-year-old, but he is young. He's young and he's off to a wonderful, wonderful start. It's like 30-year-old Drew Valentine also off to a very good start at Loyola.
Yeah, like I do think his age is part of. Like I don't say like 64-year-old John Calipari or however old he is, but I do think when somebody is 33 and a Division I head coach at a school that has some history, mm-hmm. You did the big story on George Mason's Final Four run a few years back. That was the biggest, I think the biggest, most notable development of the past two nights. And the other reason I think you see maybe 20 media members tweet about this on Wednesday night is because everybody knows Kim. And you know, maybe I can't speak for everybody, but I think most people like Kim and love seeing him have this success. It's interesting. He did something when he was in school that I've never had another college basketball player do. I've never seen anybody else do it. We were at a game at Missouri, and it was a big game. I don't remember who they were playing. I meant to look it up, and I just didn't. But there was a lot of national media there. That's the type of big game it was. So I don't remember exactly who was there, but for the sake of the conversation, let's say it was Dane O'Neill, Andy Katz, Mike DeCourcy, me, whatever. And we're all, you know, game over, press conferences. Now we're all in the media room banging out columns, trying to get to last call at some college bar, probably. Sounds like something we'd do. And door opens, and it's Kim English. And he walks in and introduces himself to every one of us. Hey, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm Kim English. Just wanted to say I really appreciate you being here. Really enjoy your work. It's good to meet you in person. You know, to Dana, and then to me, and then to Mike or whoever was there. And I just thought that was a really impressive thing at that age. Because here's the truth. College basketball fans know, you know, who these people are and what we do. But college basketball players, I don't know how much they pay attention to us, actually. And but Kim recognized at a very young age, like, hey, I don't know where my life is going. Am I going to be a professional basketball player? Am I going to be in the media like a lot of former college players? Am I going to be in coaching and I'm going to have relationships with these people? I don't want to speak for Kim, but like I'm confident he recognized those things. So why not develop relationships? Why not meet them? Why not introduce myself? I don't know. That story, as you know, I don't remember a lot of things. I can't remember who Missouri played. I can't remember who was there. I remember that. And so when you see people genuinely happy for the way Kim's head coaching career has gotten off to a nice start, I think a lot of it is tied to we feel like we've known this guy since he was a college student, because in many cases, we have known him since he was a college student.
Indeed. And that was a good hire by George Mason. There's already, I did. So that would have been Wednesday night, late Wednesday. I just was like, and I usually don't do this much, but sometimes I'm oddly intrigued. So I did pop into a Maryland message board, popped into a Missouri message board. Dude's coached four games and it's already like,
they both want to hire him.
I mean,
and like that, my Twitter mentions, cause I tweeted about it Wednesday night, and my mentions were like, Kim, it's time to come back to Missouri. Like they're ready. They're fired up. Well, good for him.
There was another thread titled on a Maryland message board. This is why, like, I'm sure some of these threads are made in jest, but some of them are earnest and serious and out of desperation and frustration. And I swear to God, one of them, and I don't remember the board. This might've been Scott Van Pelt posting this for all I know, but it's time to call Rick Pitino.
No, fans,
you're not losing Mark Turgeon this year. That's not happening. But the idea that you lose one game to George Mason for the first time in your school history, and now it's time to get Rick Pitino on the phone.
No, some of these message boards, like, I don't spend hardly any time on them because it's just like it's a total waste of time. But every once in a while, I have friends who are on them. And they'll bring me some wild thing that they read on the message board. And it's so wild that to any reasonable person, it's like, what is it? What are you even doing? But these people often, like, they really are thinking along these lines. Like, they really believe it. For instance, last year I got a buddy. He's a Florida State grad. Loves Florida State. And he texts me, I don't know, February, March. And he was like, what are you hearing on Roy Williams at North Carolina? Are you hearing he might retire? And I'm like, well, you know, at his age, you're always, you know, near retirement. So nothing would surprise me, but I'm not necessarily hearing he's definitely retiring. And I said, why, what's up? And he said, well, I just read on the message board, Florida State message board. He said that they were going to nudge Roy Williams into retirement and hire Leonard Hamilton to replace him. And I actually texted back. I was like,
are you serious with this? And he was like, yeah, that's you know, it's like good sources. I'm like, why would North Carolina retire Roy Williams and hire 73-year-old Leonard Hamilton? What are you talking? Do you realize how crazy that sounds?
He was half on it, though.
he had half of it right.
Half of it was right.
But, like, there was apparently a thread somewhere about Leonard Hamilton's going to be the next head coach at North Carolina, which would have been fine with me. But, like, North Carolina's just not going to hire a 73-year-old. Leonard Hamilton's going to coach at Florida State until he decides not to coach, and then that'll be that. But, like, that's what is often on message boards. Some wild stuff, man. Yeah.
There's a good Twitter. I don't follow this because I think it's mostly college football, but there's a Twitter handle account, Message Board Geniuses, and occasionally it'll get retweeted into my timeline, and some of them are phenomenal. Like, they're just incredible. So, yeah, I got to give Rick Pitino a call. By the way, George Mason will play James Madison on Friday for the 100th time in school history. Both those teams are undefeated. And if Mason can get that win, I believe it's a road game, then it will, like, really start to be developing a legitimate at-large candidacy, and we'll see what they can do. If George Mason gets the NCAA tournament this season and Missouri just kind of does what we think it's going to do, then yes, I suppose after just one season, there will be plenty of Kim English noise to return home. The other game we should probably talk about that happened on Thursday night was, I didn't realize this until I was watching the broadcast, Xavier gets a big win at home against Ohio State. Did you realize this was the first time these schools had played since that awesome, awesome tournament game in 2007? Trivia time! Who was on the call? Who was the play-by-play announcer for that game?
Gus Johnson?
That's right.
I don't know how I remember
that. We got someone out here checking all this. Look at that.
I might have just guessed. Fine.
Phenomenal game, though. Phenomenal. And trivia time.
Okay. Come on. Bring it. I'm one for one today.
Because it was I think that might have been the last tournament where they played on the old floors at the schools where they played in. It was before the NCAA just ruined all that and put that bland crap on the floor. What venue was that at?
Oh, that was clearly played at Pinnacle Bank?
No. I don't think Pinnacle Bank existed in 2007. That would have been Rupp Arena. So that was a second round epic
between
Xavier and Ohio State. Ohio State won that one. Xavier won on Thursday night. What was your impressions of that game?
Listen, great win for Xavier. Remember, they're still playing without Zach Fremantle, who was their leading scorer last season. He averaged 16.1 points, 8.9 rebounds. He had surgery middle of last month for a foot injury, and that's usually the recovery from that injury is like a six-week deal. So he could be back at the end of this month, maybe early December. That seems to be the timeline, but he's not back now. So they're playing out without a super important guy, and you still knock off Ohio State. You know, Paul Scruggs got, you know, 14.6 rebounds, 4 assists in that game. He's now averaging 18, 6, and 4.3 assists through 3 games. So he's having a really nice start to this season. Xavier is now 3-0. I did push them into the top 25-1. They're in the 30s in most computer rankings, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now, coming off of a big win on Thursday night. To me, the more interesting thing is Ohio State, because they're now 1-3 against the spread. Barely beat Akron despite being a 16.5 point favorite. Only beat Niagara by 10 despite being a 19.5 point favorite. And then lost at Xavier by 6 despite being a 2.5 point favorite. So they haven't been performing to expectations. And I think there's an obvious issue relative to what the preseason expectations were. Mm-hmm. And it's that Cedric Russell is giving them nothing. You know, he's the transfer from Louisiana that I made not a big deal. It wasn't like signing
huge deal.
Well, it wasn't like signing Amani Bates, but it was like, hey, they lost Dwayne Washington, but they're grabbing Cedric Russell, this transfer from Louisiana, who averaged 17 points per game last season and shot 40% from three on 7.3 attempts per game. Like, some of that's got to translate. You thought. I went back and looked it up in this offseason when they secured the commitment from Cedric Russell. That was a reason for me to update the top 25-1, and I moved them up based on that addition. Not far, but some. Well, he played 4 minutes against Akron, missed the second game of the season because of a death in the family, played 8 minutes against Bowling Green, didn't play at all against Xavier. Again, he was supposed to help ease the loss of Dwayne Washington. He's been a total non-factor this season. It doesn't mean he won't be a factor at some point, but it's just a reminder that these mid-major slash low-major transfers up to the tip-top of the sport, they often don't make the impact some of us, and I include myself in this, think that they will. He's been a total nothing so far for the Buckeyes. And then they lost Justice Suen to an abdominal injury. He's going to be out for what has been described as, quote, an extended period of time. He was the third leading scorer on that team last season, averaged 10.7 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. So if you don't have Justice Suen and Cedric Russell is giving you nothing, you might be in a tough spot.
Yeah, and if Russell's dealing with a death in the family, that's obviously our thoughts go out to him, and that might be hampering his development in the short term there. But Ohio State, you mentioned your – listen, great. Welcome to the party, by the way. I had him ranked in the preseason, top 25 level. Because I haven't seen your latest. I got something with your rankings coming up, though. I'm gonna surprise you with something here. Did you swap out Ohio State and Xavier, basically? Like, Ohio State left your rankings and Xavier jumped in? Is that what happened?
That's right. The only other thing I considered is putting Michigan State back in because they just blew out Butler. The computer numbers are improving since that season opening. Disappointing because they didn't really play competitively, loss to Kansas. Michigan State, again, has good – the computer numbers have improved since then. They just blew out Butler at Hinkle. I was going to throw them in, and I just said, you know what? I'll go with the team that just got a big win as opposed to the team that, you know, took a loss to a great team. But really, you know, like beating Butler is by a bunch is notable, but, you know, Butler's not ranked. I'm not sure how good Butler's going to be. So I was picking between Xavier and Michigan State for 26th after dropping Ohio State out of the rankings, yes.
Gotcha. All right. So I meant to do what I'm about to do right now. I meant to do it in the episode before the start of the season, but we just got all caught up with other stuff there. I'm about to read you the very first. I saved this when you did it, and I did not look at it until literally this morning. The very first edition of your top 25 and one that you filed the morning after the Final Four. Mm-hmm. Let's just see how much has changed. Now, this was obviously before. Transfers, people that left for the draft, all that goes without saying. But let's just, you know, a lot of these teams are in similar spots. A couple of them are in the exact spot as the day after Final Four. Obviously, some of them are gone. So I'm going to read it off. And here, this is the day after Baylor won the championship. This was Parrish's top 25 and one. I'll read through this real quick. He had UCLA one. It's now number two. This, by the way, when I say now number two, this was as of yesterday's. I didn't see his new one, so I might be off by a ranking or two with some of these, but you get the picture. UCLA was one. It's now number two. Gonzaga was two. It's now number one. Do you know who you had third?
I don't remember.
You had Alabama, number three, now 11th. But that was before they had, you know, they're still highly ranked, but
they had significant, somewhat unexpected roster turnover. Like, I don't know, the day after the Final Four, many people had, say, Josh Primo entering the draft.
Exactly. Perfect example. So you had Alabama three, you had Duke four, now sixth, you had Baylor fifth, now eighth. So we're still staying in number six, though, out of the poll, Ohio State. But that was before NBA draft decisions, but you did have
that's when you're expecting, or at least I was expecting. I think if you go back and looked at my projected roster, yes, it had Dwayne Washington Jr. on it.
Right.
Yeah. So
basically with everyone back, they were a two seed. That's why.
Yeah.
Florida State was seven. They're out. Michigan was eighth. You had them 17th. Purdue, you had nine. They're now 10. You had Kansas 10. They're now three in your rankings. You had Villanova 11, which is now up to four. Houston was 12 then, is 12 now. Another team that's out, that was 13, Maryland. They're now out of your rankings. Kentucky was 14 then, 13 now, pretty much the same. Another one, Carolina, 15 then, 15 now, holding steady. Arkansas, you had 16th. You had UConn 17. Those are both still ranked. You've got Arkansas top 10. Another team that's out that you just mentioned, Michigan State, you had 18. They're gone. Bonnies, you had 19. They're now 23. Tennessee's been basically the same, 20 versus 19. And then you got teams that are out. You had Arizona, 21. They're out. You had USC, 22. Out. Virginia, 23. Out.
I've got USC back in now, by the way.
Okay. Well, I didn't see that.
USC's in.
USC's in. Virginia, out. Oregon, out. Illinois was 25. Now they were 22 at most recent. And then 26 with Syracuse, which is out. So nothing like crazy drastic.
Yeah, I would say, if you don't mind me saying, that thing, that holds up pretty well.
You did a pretty good job. Alabama at three makes sense back then, but it was certainly notable that they were three. And then the highest ranked ones that aren't in the rankings now, Ohio State at six and FSU at seven. So a fun little exercise.
Well,
changes happened over the offseason that it was cool to kind of go back to look at that day after.
Well, right now I've got Memphis in the top 10. I didn't have Memphis in that one. And that obviously is because they added Jalen Turin and Amani Bates.
That's right. So is there anyone else aside from, because that's what I didn't check because we were, again, we ran into tech issues. Memphis is top 10. What's the second off the top of your head, given that you do this every single day? Memphis is a high ranked team that you didn't have ranked at all the day after the title game. What would be the next highest ranked team, if you can pull that from memory, your rankings now?
BYU. I mean, I've got BYU 14th now. I had BYU unranked in the preseason, unranked the day after the Final Four. Seton Hall is another one. I've got Seton Hall now 16th. They were unranked on the day after the Final Four and unranked all the way through the preseason. Some of this is like the outliers. Like, you know, you had Maryland, but you don't now, or you had Oregon, but you don't now. It's because they just lost. You know, they did. If you flip those results, and I know you can't, but you flip those results, they're still in. That actually, it's a reminder, I think, that, you know, I do that every year, right after the championship game, the next morning, whenever. And immediately people are like, you don't, this means nothing. You don't know. But clearly, you know, you're going to miss on Dwayne Washington coming back. You're not going to know where Amani Bates and Jalen Duren are going to be in college because they both reclassified. But generally speaking, it is a pretty good indicator of who's going to be good in the season that is still, you know, whatever, 7 months away.
Well, I got some nuggets if you want them. If you want to hit on a few quick things here, a couple of headlines. I'll be quick on this. Pat Baldwin Jr. played Florida on Thursday, had 13 points. They got romped. That stinks. They only got two big games. I wound up talking about this on HQ this morning, GP. That was, you know, somewhat of an, they had 40, close to 40 scouts in attendance. Gonzaga, Texas had 23. Now, to be fair, the scouts are probably thinking that we're going to have plenty of time to watch Gonzaga, UCLA, Gonzaga, right, Duke, or whatever. But it was, you know, Baldwin wasn't that good. So that was, Florida continues to look pretty, pretty damn good. But Milwaukee, I hope it's not a season that goes to waste, but they were not competitive. You don't just walk into the O-Dome, as you well know. So that's a headline. Jim Calhoun is retiring for good, D3. I was going to bring up the audio to play on this pod, GP, that you had mentioned, but I went back and listened to it. Like you said, you did. Emeka Okafor, Caron Butler. They're not bad. He drops like 11 F bombs and I was not going to manipulate the audio with all the, I can't do this. But Calhoun is, he's done. So he retires at the age of 79, three national titles, 10 Big East regular season championships, 7 tournament championships. Obviously a Hall of Famer. He steps down from Division III St. Joseph's right here where I live. So wanted to mention that. Two more things. I mentioned Gonzaga, UCLA. Dick Vitale has been cleared to return. Right. Come on now. We'd love to see that. He's been battling cancer and undergoing treatment. So I just love that he's still doing this, man. I'm ambassador for college basketball, right?
He's the best. And he's one of the most recognizable college basketball figures who has ever lived because of the prominence he's played on college basketball broadcast, because of his bald head, because he's Dickie V, because of, you know, PT Piers. He's, I know, from a broadcasting perspective, he's not for everybody. Like, you know, I, 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 but that is the sweetest man in the world, and a man who has worked tirelessly to raise money for cancer research. He's as genuine as they come. I know that from a distance, this is, I think, sometimes rare in life for public figures. From a distance, some people are annoyed by it. But up close, everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. Everybody. And, you know, it's just awful to hear what he's been going through. But unsurprisingly, he's kept a super positive attitude. And to see that pop on Thursday night that he's going to return for that massive, you know, Gonzaga-UCLA showdown, it made me smile. You know, I don't know how much longer he's going to do this. But I love, at the very least, we're going to get to see him do it one more time. And I love that for him, he's going to get to be in that building and do what he has done so enthusiastically for decades. He's just, there's nobody I root for more than that guy.
Absolutely, man. I remember this would have been, I think 2012, maybe 2013, I was at the Garden to cover. I'm going to pull a parachute. I don't remember who was playing. No idea.
Doesn't matter.
But I remember this. I remember this. And it's probably like an hour before the game. Like a few fans maybe had filtered in. But teams are shooting around and Vital's on the call. And we had met before. I had done a thing before I got to CBS when I ran College Hoops Journal back in the day. Shout out to the OGs who listened to the College Hoops Journal podcast. Where I had gone up to ESPN and actually sat with Dick Vitale, Reese Davis, Digger Phelps, and I had basically chronicled a day of watching the NCAA, the first day of the NCAA tournament at ESPN, and it was awesome, and I had a great time. That would have been, I think, March of 09 when I did that. And it was awesome. They were wonderful, and it was a great time. But I was just kind of sitting there. I was talking with maybe Jeff Goodman. But Vital came up and like shook my hand and like he knew my name and called me out by name. And I didn't know that he knew who I was. And it was like, you know, we had never made communication like, you know, directly like that. We had not exchanged emails or anything like that or DMs. So it was on a personal note. It was something that kind of took me aback there because, you know, he's certainly a living legend in all of American sports there. And as you probably well know, he's got a nice team that helps kind of get how he's written a couple of books and you know all this stuff. And so every time Dick Vitale does something, like I'm getting something in the mail, personalized. Matt, I hope you like. I could go and hunt somewhere over here behind me. Hey, Matt, hope you enjoy this. Love your coverage. Thanks so much, Dickie V. Like he's signing it. He's got a very just a wonderful, wonderful man. And you are right. The way that he calls a game has turned polarizing over the years because he's got his own style. But I'm just telling you, as a person, don't know anyone better in all of college basketball media, yeah. And maybe all of media period. And it is wonderful that he is going to be back on the mic and still working.
That's right. And like, again, I'd mentioned this, you know, sometimes people seem great or enjoyable or likable from a distance. But then if you're ever really around them, you wouldn't really enjoy them too much. Like they're better from a distance than they are up close. I think somebody's probably said that about me before.
Okay.
But Dick is the rare example of somebody who's better up close than he might be from a distance. I don't know anybody who knows him who doesn't love him. And, you know, you mentioned you know, getting the signed books and all that stuff. He's just a generous man who takes time to make people feel better. And like when I posted on Instagram, I think when my son got accepted to Emory, which we were really excited about, not so excited about the tuition, $92,000 a year. Yeah, that's not fun. But these dudes take $8,700 out of my checking account the 27th of every month. $8,700 comes out of my checking account the 27th of every month. Oh, that's a hell of a thing.
You got eight more days, buddy. Brace.
it's a hell of a thing to look at when you call up the the truest account. But so anyway, I put that on Instagram or somewhere. And, you know, you get a text message from Dick Vitale, who's like, hey, just really excited. This sounds great, blah, 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 blah. And if you'd have told 13-year-old me that someday Dick Vitale would be texting me randomly on a Wednesday afternoon, I'd be like, what's texting? Probably because it didn't exist when I was 13. But you get the point. You and I have been doing this long enough now. We've met everybody there is to meet, and we've been around all these famous people, and you know, you get numb to it. But there's still something about these larger than life figures from your childhood, you know, that you've got a relationship with them to whatever degree now, that's still neat. And you know, getting to watch Dick Vitale still work in the year 2021 is neat. Getting to see him work soon under these circumstances is, as he might say, awesome, baby. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's awesome, baby. That's right. And I'll move on with one more headline, but I'll just say this, like us doing this podcast, college basketball being where it is and what it is, and it's obviously a competing network and how much they broadcast, it's, that is Vitale in the early 80s, all through that decade into the early 90s. For the young people listening to this, and man, do you sound old when you say for the young people listening to this, but seriously, if you're under 25, you probably can't really fully appreciate or realize how influential of a figure in the sport Mr. Vitale is, has been, and awesome that he's, it's awesome, baby, that he's back on the mic here. Last thing, I just want to mention this. I'm still technically right, but I'm not going to be right for much longer. There have been two postponements or games not being played due to more than two, but two teams due to COVID outbreaks. Wagner is currently postponing games. And then Abilene Christian, it's not even traveling to play in the Baja Mar 8-team tournament that it's that it was supposed to be in down at the Bahamas. For the purposes of the tournament, the games will be forfeited, but they are not being logged as forfeits. So ACU, which made the tournament last season, by the way, it's not going to have any losses in the standings because of forfeits. And then it was like supposed to play Coastal Carolina on Monday, starting in that. Coastal Carolina doesn't get a win. So as far as the NCAA is concerned, these are not yet forfeits. But I said good vibes only. Under 0.5 forfeits this season. We are still technically under, but it's not a great thing that we're 9-10 days in, and we've already had two teams that have not been able to play. So hopefully
because they're not properly vaccinated, correct?
That is my understanding. Yes. Specifically with Abilene Christian. Yes. Multiple players on that roster, not vaccinated. So because of that, you have positive tests, and then you have contact tracing, which is why they can't go. Throw in the fact they are going to an island, and you'd have to quarantine and all that stuff. Yeah. So yes, that is correct.
All right, Dead Leg. There's a pretty good college basketball schedule on tap for the weekend over the next 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're going to get into that momentarily, preview some games, pick some games. The Final Four and One is next. But first, check this out.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, Deadleg, before we get to the Final Four and one, you got our updated records?
I do. I actually had to go back and I went back and listened. So I'm going to be jotting these down in real time this time so I don't have to do this. And it was quite a treat to go back and listen to last week's segment, which went long. We'll be quicker this time. And you we'll to have this, these, con- I know you had these picks. You were like, yeah, man, no, it's, I got to go with Texas to cover. It was like 11. I got to go with Texas to cover and Florida State. And he was like, yeah, how can I not go with the Noles here? I'm going with the Noles. Noles did not cover. So you were 1-4.
Nah, it doesn't sound right.
It is. I went back and listened. You were 1-4.
I feel like I'm getting cheated.
I am 3-2. Continuing to take, we had a good couple suggestions in the comments last week in this podcast episode on YouTube. Go ahead and drop us some suggestions for what should be on the line for our season long records here. But I'm 3-2. You are 1-4. You offer up the first four games, and I will do the and one and give us the fifth game to pick. Who do we got?
Friday. It's game one. Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Ohio at number 13, Kentucky, inside Rex Chapman Arena. Kentucky minus 12. You can watch it on the SEC Network.
This is tasty. Ohio's good. They lost an NBA player, and they might be just as good. This is
go ahead. Talk about their big win. No, I know you want to. Who'd they beat? Who'd they beat?
We don't need to talk about that. We just don't need to talk about that. Ohio is 97th KenPom as we speak right now, 3-0. Yes, they did knock out Belmont. They also have wins over Cleveland State and Bobby Moe. So here comes a game against Kentucky. Numbers too big. I'm taking Ohio to win this. Not to win. Marks. I was looking at the name. Mark Sears, sophomore point guard, will be a wonderful replacement to Jason Preston, who's moved on to bigger and better things. So you give me 12, and this is the line. This is not the KenPom line. This is the line. We actually have, courtesy of Caesar Sportsbook, for all these Friday games, we have lines. There's a couple Saturday we got to get to, but the Friday games are the actual lines. So give me Jeff Bowles and company to win by single or to lose. I keep saying they're going to win. Like, to lose by single digits. I hope they win. Go back. Nada will go back, cut this, make it look like I predicted an Ohio win the whole time, but I actually think it'll be pretty close. Like they'll lose by 5 or 6. Ohio covers with ease.
Kentucky's got some wild statistical individual performances going on right now.
Dude, I know you're about to say this, but I forgot to mention Oscar Tshiebwe is averaging 18.7 rebounds a game.
What? I mean, it's 18.7. He's averaging 18.3 points and 18.7 rebounds in 30.3 minutes per game. That's outrageous.
It's a joke.
And then there's Sevier Wheeler. Remember, he led the SEC in assists per game last season at Georgia at 7.4. He's averaging 10 assists per game right now in 30 minutes per game, 11 points, 10 assists. And then Kellen Grady is averaging 12 points per game, shooting 56.3% from three. So the transfer market, I think you could reasonably argue nobody's benefiting from the transfer market right now more than Kentucky. And we talked about this a lot in the preseason, or at least I did, that Kentucky had obvious problems last season. There were three of them that really stood out. Too reliant on freshmen, no high-level point guards, and not enough competent three-point shooters. So they go out and add Sevier Wheeler, Kellen Grady. They enroll Ty Washington. So check out this difference. They added multiple high-level point guards, and they added shooting. Now check this difference out. Last season, Kentucky shot 33.6% from three, which ranked 176th in the country. And they turned it over on 19.8% of the possessions, which ranked 217th in the country. Now, they're shooting 45.1% from three. That's 18th in the country. And they're only turning it over on 16.6% of their possessions. That ranks 90th in the country. They are like, 150 spots better in the country in three-point field goal percentage. And, around 120, 130 spots better in offensive turnover rate. They really And I think this, you know, John really specifically addressed these issues, and it's still early, but the numbers have drastically improved. And that's why Kentucky's going to be a drastically, or at least it's among the reasons Kentucky's going to be a drastically better team than they were last season. And a, you know, legitimate candidate to go to a Final Four, even if they did start the season 0-1 with a loss to Duke.
Yeah, I talked about this on HQ on Friday morning, then we can move on to the next game. But to me, the perimeter stuff is significant, but the rebounding of Shibwe and what he can be is what will ultimately make Kentucky Final Four worthy, I think, this season. We'll see if he can keep it. 18 a game is not, I mean, that's like Bill Russell territory. Like, you cannot, that's not sustainable. But if you're going to tell me Shibwe is going to be like a 14 board a game guy, that's magnificent, particularly if he's going to be that good and be reliable on the offensive end so they can get second chance opportunities after threes and all that good stuff. If you picked it, I missed it. I have Ohio covering. Who do you have?
I'll take Kentucky to cover just because I'll be different than you. That really is the only reason. And you say it's not sustainable with Shibwe, and I think that's probably right. Like, I don't believe he's going to average 18 rebounds per game. But this isn't one of those deals where, you know, sometimes you see, especially early in the season, like somebody had this massive performance and then, you know, sort of normalized after that. But the average, you know, on the season is still really high. This dude has gone 20, 20, and 16. So it's not like some outlier performance that's pushing him up to 18 rebounds a game. He's got at least 16 in three consecutive games, one of which was against, you know, Duke and that front line that features future NBA players, former five-star prospects. So again, I agree with you. I don't think it's sustainable, but yeah, it looks like he's going to average 14, maybe 15 rebounds per game. You know, that he's been incredible so far in the season. Game two, Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern. It's Georgia Tech at Georgia inside Sunday out of Gaines Coliseum. Georgia Tech -5.5. You can watch it on the SEC Network. You don't remember Sunday out of Gaines?
No, I don't. You got 5.5?
That's what it showed me.
Take Georgia. I'm going to take Georgia here, but I don't have a great reason. I need to know why you picked this game. What kind?
It's an in-state rivalry between Josh Pastner and Tom Crean. What are you even talking about? They're playing it in Sunday out of Gaines Coliseum. When I was a young reporter, I had hair and stuff. I covered a 13 and under AAU national championship tournament. Number one ranked 13-year-old in the country at the time, Sunday out of Gaines.
How'd that work out for him?
He became a Division I player.
Yeah.
Did some stuff after that.
What stuff?
Got a Coliseum named after him for one.
There we go. I'd like to see it. I'm going Ugga, although, got to say, returns aren't that strong. Georgia's 2-1. Loss on the road to Cincinnati, has beaten FIU and 350th at KenPom, South Carolina State, by a cool 16 points. Georgia Tech is also 2-1, opened up with a home loss. For the second consecutive season, by the way, opened up with a home loss to a mid-major team, loss to Miami University. That's out of Ohio, not out of South Beach, or Coral Gables, if you will. And has wins over Stetson and Lamar. I don't know what the hell to think about either of these teams. I think Georgia Tech's the better team, but I'll take Georgia to cover in this.
Yeah, I'll take Georgia plus the points as well. This is year four for Tom Crean. It has not gone well. Record to date is 43-50 overall, 14-40 in the SEC. He's finished 13th, 13th, and tied for 10th in his first 3 years in the league. And then after last season, like, lost his whole team. I think they had top six scorers, might have transferred. And now, like, as you point out, they're outside of the top 160 at KenPom, well behind Georgia Tech and Georgia State. They're 2-1 with a couple of nothing wins to go with that loss at Cincinnati. But KenPom currently projects Georgia's record to be 10-20 overall, 3-15 in the SEC. That's not a great first 4 years. He got Marquette going more quickly than that, and he got Indiana rebuilt from nothing more quickly than that. I'm surprised that this is going the way it's going. Are you surprised this is going the way it's going?
To this extent, yes. I cannot believe this is season four already, though. It's kind of wild to me that he's already in his fourth year at Georgia. And this is undeniably a hot seat situation. If they are not a good team and they are flirting at 500 or worse, it would not surprise me if we wound up seeing a coaching change there. But big opportunity here, like stuff like this. Can you win this game? Can you steal this one as an underdog? A nice opportunity. And I do think that Georgia will keep it close. So I will take them to cover.
Game three, Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Number 5, Villanova versus number 17, Tennessee, inside Mohegan Sun Arena. I forgot. Do we rename neutral court arenas?
I don't believe we do.
I don't think we do either.
I think we just we pay respect to the venue that it is. And but you know what? I saw DMB here less than 2 weeks ago. This is going to be Carter Beaufort Arena for all I care. Carter Beaufort Arena. I'm going to be on hand. Are you aware of this?
Yes, I'm aware.
I didn't know if you knew. I'm going to this game.
We've actually talked about it.
Have we?
Sure.
No. Yeah, Are you sure?
Yeah, you're going on Saturday, but you can't go on Sunday because it's your boy's birthday.
Boom. He's on it. That's right. Not technically his birthday, but we're having the party and all that good stuff.
We can name it Staples Center since that's going away. From now on, every neutral court will be Staples Center. So let me do it again. Game three, Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern. It's number 5, Villanova versus number 17, Tennessee, inside Staples Center. KenPom has it, Villanova -1. You can watch it on ESPN News.
Is that the channel?
Dude, you can't it's college football Saturday. You're lucky to be on ESPN News.
That's wild.
It's either ESPN News or Pac-12 Network.
Man, oh man, oh man.
Pac-12 Network should try to get that Villanova Tennessee game.
It should.
That'd have been good for them.
If it was in the Pac-12, it'd be one hell of a coup.
What if the Pac-12 started scheduling non-Pac-12 games? They're like, you know what? We've had enough.
I want to know if anyone at the Pac-12 Network listens to this podcast. They must adore you. Just outright adore you.
You know what? I can't get the channel.
I know. It is what it is. I'm not saying don't walk this back.
And I, you know what? I reached out to him one time trying to be because you Pac-12 fans, West Coast fans are always like accusing you of East Coast bias. Even though I live in the South, I get constantly accused of East Coast bias. And they're like, you don't watch us. You don't watch us. And I'm like, you know what? It's partly true. A, because it's late and I got young kids. But secondly, you know, at least once a week, there's a game that I would watch, but it's on Pac-12 Network. I can't watch it.
So did you even watch the game? No.
No. One of the big misconceptions about covering college basketball is that you have to watch the games. Not that important. It's not really that important. And so I reached out to the Pac-12 office, and I said, hey, listen, there's a lot of media members that would probably like to watch your games and, you know, see how good Oregon State is or isn't. But like, we don't have access to your channel because you don't have a DirecTV contract. Have you guys ever thought, just throwing it out there. Have you guys ever thought about providing logins to your streaming for people in the media so that we can actually see these games? And they were like, yeah, we're not going to do that. I was like, well, that seems counterproductive, but good luck growing your brand.
Exactly.
Conference of Champions.
That's probably a Larry Scott thing. This is a tough one. I don't know. This one feels toss-up-ish to me. I think Villanova is a slightly better team. Excited to see your little homie from Memphis.
He is.
Kennedy Chandler.
He's been great.
He's been terrific. But him matched up with either Gillespie or perhaps Justin Moore. We'll see how Villanova chooses to defend him. I think this can be a wonderful game. I think this can be the very best game of the entire weekend in college basketball. I cannot wait to see it. Give me Nova to win. Nova to win and Nova to cover here. And I hope it lives up to the potential of being, you know, a very, very good game. Not as good maybe as Nova UCLA last weekend, but given the Wildcats also lost that, they've got a bit of urgency here. I'll take Jay Wright's team to win.
Kennedy Chandler is my little homie from Memphis. He's averaging team high 18 points, 5 assists, 1.5 steals in 24 minutes per game. 18 points in 24 minutes per game. He's 6 of 7 from 3 through 2 games. That's 85.7%. He's 100% from the free throw line. And you're picking against that guy?
Yeah, I am.
He's going to come out and put RIP Dolph on his sneakers and go for 25.
I didn't take that into consideration, actually.
You don't pick against a young man from Memphis in the aftermath of Dolph's murder.
That's a fair point. Although Jay Wright just got into the Hall of Fame. This is the Hall of Fame tip off. I figure he might have, you know, the ghost of James Naismith. It'll basically be, the ghost of James Naismith backing Jay Wright here, while Kennedy Chandler will have understandable motivation after just a horrendous tragedy in your home city with Young Dolph, talented rapper there. Just an awful, awful, awful story.
I don't want to overstate it. I didn't almost witness it, but like I landed right after it happened at Memphis International. And I drive right past there to go to my radio studio, or I drive near there to go to my radio studio. But if I decide, hey, I might want to grab something to eat before I go to studio, I might drive right past there. And broad daylight. I mean, it's clearly he got ambushed. It was a targeted hit. And when I was leaving the airport, they were just now blocking off Airways, which is the street that is, you know, runs parallel to the airport. Because, yeah, the murder happened, a mile and a half from Memphis International. And obviously the city's just reeling because, you know, first off, a prominent, and I know he's, you know, I get it. He's a flawed, you know, he lived a certain lifestyle, but he also did a lot of really good, positive things for his community. And to see that happen is just wild. And as of this moment, they still don't have suspects. So we'll see. But, yeah, it's been a wild week here.
You taking Tennessee?
Of course. Ken, I'm not going against Kennedy Chandler. That's crazy. By the way, I was looking at Villanova's team stats. They have four players averaging at least 16 points per game. That's not common.
Well, we're three games in. Like, let's give it a few more. I know what you're saying. It's not common, but they've also the UCLA game was overtime, more minutes and all that. They played, I think, six dudes in that game. So that's why that's happened.
Yeah, I don't need your explanation. I was just stating a fact. They have four players averaging at least 16 points per game. Game four, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, number 18 North Carolina versus number 6 Purdue inside Staples Center. KenPom has it Purdue -9. You can watch that one on ESPN News.
Did you know I'm going to be at this game?
Yep. Yep. I didn't assume you were going to leave after Villanova, Tennessee.
What if I did that? What if I showed up for Villanova? You know what? I'm out. What did I tell you in the preseason? What did I harp on?
I don't listen when you talk.
Okay.
Somebody actually did take a screen grab, and they were like, "I always assume Parrish clocked out when Norlander was talking." And I'm like this. I'm like, just hurry up so I can get back to rambling again, exactly. Talking about Young Dolph and premarital sex.
There we go. That's three shows in a row. I told you Zach Edey was going to be awesome. Told you.
You didn't say he's going to put Travion Williams on the bench.
That I did not say.
What is that about?
It's about Zach Edey averaging 18.7 points, 10.3 rebounds, and 2 swats a game. Travion's doing all right for himself. He's averaging 11.7 points and 9.3 rebounds and 3 assists. Like, Williams has been the first guy off the bench and still in 18 minutes a game. Purdue's friggin' terrific. They have been the reliable Big Ten team to this point, and I do think that will continue this week. If you have not yet seen Zach Edey because you just didn't really follow Purdue a ton because they weren't like a top seed last season, they got knocked out right away in the tournament. He's probably going to be the most improved player in college basketball this season, and he's a monster. He's 7'4", and he just changes the entire dynamic for what Purdue can be. Purdue is 3-0. And has defeated three average teams. Wright State, you know, might be the best team in the horizon, whatever. They killed them 96-52. They also have wins over Indiana State and Bellarmine there. As for Carolina, also 3-0, but it has flirted. As we talked about this with GP on the previous podcast because he was there for the Charleston game. But flirted with Brown and flirted with Charleston in terms of taking a loss there. One scored 94 in both of those games. Beat Brown by 7 in Charleston. They got away late. So they are 3-0, but I do like Purdue in this spot. I like them to win. That line's big. I think too big. So if it's, I don't think it's, this is one of the deals where we got to give you the KenPom line because we don't have the actual Caesars line yet. I don't think it's going to be 9. I think it'll be like 6.5, 7. If it was that, it'd be a little bit tougher. I will take Purdue to win, but I will take Carolina to be inside the 9.
I'll lay the points. You know, North Carolina is 52nd at KenPom, 50th at Torvik, and 107th in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. They let Brown score 87, Charleston score 83. Meantime, Purdue is 2nd in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency, according to KenPom. They've scored the 90s in all 3 games. They might put 100 on North Carolina.
It's possible.
Yeah. They might put 100 on North Carolina. And so I'll take Purdue to cover that number. I want to circle back to the Trevion Williams thing. He was 6th on our list of top 101 players in college basketball, a consensus preseason All-American. And he is coming off the bench averaging 18.3 minutes per game. He's now 5th on the team in scoring. He was 6th on our list of top 101 players in the country. He's now 5th on his own team in scoring. And Matt Painter was asked about this recently. And delivered a pretty lengthy quote. I guess he was asked about something along the lines of, how does Trevion feel about coming off the bench? And here's what Matt said. He said, I don't think he agrees with it, but he does buy into it. And I don't want them to agree with me. I want them to be professional about it. I want them to understand the big picture about it and then go out knowing it's not personal. Their job when they came to Purdue wasn't to start. Their job when they came to Purdue was to help us win. I think it's hard to go through that, especially when you've started before. But if they've been around me, they know nothing's final, nothing's concrete. I'm not going to do it to appease somebody. I'm going to do what I think is best for Purdue. It does say a lot about Trevion, how he's handled it. You can see if they handle it maturely by how they play. They showed their maturity when they play well. If you come off the bench and you're really upset about it, you normally don't play well. You've got to have a clear mind. And then he went on to add that Zach and Trevion, quote, timeshare anyway, look at their stats. And it is true. Like, Zach Edey is averaging 19 minutes per game. Trevion Williams is averaging 18.3 minutes per game, pretty close. But Edey is up 4.3 minutes per game from last season, and Williams is down 6.7 minutes per game from last season. So that's an interesting little thing, development, that has happened in this season, that a player as productive and prominent as Trevion Williams is coming off his bench and only playing 18 minutes per game, but it's hard to argue with the results. And, you know, who would I be to argue with? Like, Matt Painter and that staff know their team better than I know their team, and you know their team. I'm going to trust that they know what they're doing, but this is not something I don't think was on many people's radar in the offseason or in the preseason, that Trevion Williams' role would be coming off the bench and playing less than 20 minutes per game. Did you know, because I somehow missed this last month, and I stumbled into it last night when I was getting all of this stuff ready. You know, he had an incident with a McDonald's employee last month?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, so some really nice reporting done on this, I believe by the campus newspaper. If it's not, forgive me. But apparently he was at a McDonald's after 1 a.m. and had made a mobile order for some fries. And they were like, hey, we're closed. We're not going to be able to fulfill that order. And he's getting into it with one employee. And then that employee goes and gets the manager. The manager is like a woman in her 30s. And she comes out and there's audio recording of it. Like, you can hear them talking. And she's explaining to him, like, we're closed. And he's like, I've already been charged. And she's like, you're not going to be charged. Cancel your order to give you peace of mind. But, you know, you're not going to be charged for your fries. And he's like, I want my basket of fries. And then what you hear is clearly her walking away. And then you hear her scream. And she alleges that he pushed her down. There's video, surveillance video, that this publication also obtained, is really well reported, that shows her falling undeniably as she's re-entering the store. But it's unclear. You cannot tell. I couldn't tell by watching the video if he shoved her or if the door made her fall or if she just fell on her own. I couldn't tell. And the way the report described it was similarly. They couldn't tell. So it might just be a he said, she said thing. Purdue obviously didn't punish him in any sort of public way. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea if any of this stuff is tied together, but it was a pretty under the radar, and no charges were filed, nothing like that. But yeah, he had a at the very least, an uncomfortable, awkward, possibly inappropriate incident with a McDonald's employee last month that I think mostly stayed off the national radar, although I'm certain every Purdue fan, especially the ones on the message boards, know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I had not heard that, but Williams also was asked about his role a couple, maybe after the first game, maybe after the second game, and he gave a good response to it about approaching that, all that. But I know I had not heard that, but hopefully everything is okay in regard to that. Last game, cruising over an hour here. Let's wrap this puppy up. I'm just going to call this. I can't call every neutral court Staples Center. If you want to do that, that's fine.
I do want to do that.
Is it still the Staples Center as we speak, or did that, like, that? Are they changing the signage right now? Like,
I believe it changes next month, but for now, in this moment, it's Staples Center, as is Mohegan Sun.
Okay. Friday. Undefeated matchup here. 3-0 Wichita State against 3-0 Arizona in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. 10 p.m. ESPNU. The line is Arizona minus 9. Tommy Lloyd's first high-profile game as head coach of the Wildcats. Who you got?
I'll lay the points. Somebody tweeted me this morning and said, when's the last time somebody won a national championship in their first year as a head coach? Because Tommy Lloyd's about to do it. I'm paraphrasing. It wasn't quite that. But like, they were really excited about the start of the Tommy Lloyd era. Yeah, I'll lay the points with Arizona. But that's an obviously big number against the reigning American Athletic Conference champions.
Did you see the video? I think it was Taylor Eldridge, local reporter out of Wichita. He shared. So this would have been after the Tarleton State win earlier this week. Wichita State wins because it's 3-0. Dexter Dennis, fantastic player. Him and Tyson Etienne are Wichita State's two best players. And I just never seen this before. I don't know if there's a backstory to this or if he just felt obligated to do, I don't know, but judging off the video that Taylor shared, it's like 45 minutes after the game has ended, press stuff is all done. And Dexter Dennis is walking around the stands with the cleaning crew, like picking up trash in the arena. Like, he's a star on the basketball. So I don't know the backstory. I don't know if he wanted to do it. If it's something else where he was obligated to do it, I don't know. All I know is I'd never seen anything like that. And if this is something that he just felt like he wanted to give back, good on you, Dexter Dennis. But I'd seen that earlier in the week, and I just can't ever recall. I've seen plenty of videos of players getting up shots an hour after the media has done what it needs to do and whatever. I'd never seen any player actually go, you know, bag in hand, picking up, you know, used cups and et cetera, all of that in the aisles. So that was interesting, and hopefully he was doing it for all the right reasons, which it seemed it was. I will take Wichita State. With that in mind, I will take Wichita State. It's 9's a lot. Give me the Shockers to finish inside that number.
He might have just broken curfew, you know?
It could be something like that, but I don't want to assume that.
I don't want to assume that.
Have you ever seen that? I've never seen that.
No. I can't even get my kids to pick up their high C's.
I mean,
and throw them away.
Exactly.
Got high C's just laying everywhere. Just throw your high C package into the garbage. That's not difficult. Dexter Dennis can come live in my house whenever he wants. We'll move him in upstairs. If you could just pick up everybody's high C packages. Your kid's good at throwing things in the garbage.
Yes, they are, actually.
Mine are terrible.
Sorry. Hey, how about the splash? We're better. Full size Bears. That's how I got a shade on. I got a shade down behind that with the flag, and I'm still, that's manageable. I feel like I'm not blinding viewers.
Your lighting situation is so inferior to mine.
It is, undeniably. But my room situation is certainly superior. Gonna hop on the drums after this. Slam some skins for a couple minutes.
Slam some skins. Right. You sound like Brandon Davies.
I'm gonna smash those skins. And you should smash that subscribe button. Shouts to Nada again. If you're watching on YouTube, the banner at the bottom says smash the like and subscribe buttons, and then in parentheses, you have consent. That's wonderful producing, Nada.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Anthony Jones, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast in the middle of the absolute dumbest, most ridiculous pandemic of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. While you're there, please rate it, review it, 5 stars and nice comments. And then, like Deadleg said, go to that YouTube page. Hit the bell button so you can get alerts when a new video drops. I hit the bell button. I don't think I've gotten an alert yet. What do you think that means?
I think you might have to make a call to YouTube like you did the Pac-12 Network and see how that works out for you.
Somebody get YouTube on the phone for me. I don't think I'm proper.
I gotta call the YouTube.
I gotta get YouTube on the phone. I don't think my bell's ringing correctly, but they say it will. So like, trust them. Don't trust me. We started this thing 30 minutes late because of my wire. So don't trust me on this stuff. If they say you hit the bell button, you'll get alerts, then you probably will. I don't recall getting an alert yet. Smash the like button. What would Brandon Davies do to that like button? He would smash it. He would give up an entire year of basketball just to smash that like button. He's done it before. You have consent. Go smash it. We'll talk to you again on Monday morning. We should let people know.
That's correct. Travel again.
I got a flight to New York City on Sunday night. And Succession's on. Curb Your Enthusiasm's on. So Monday morning from New York City, my lighting situation should be great. I should have Manhattan in the background. Looking forward to it. We'll talk to you then. Till then, take care.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9/8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.